father told my brothers and me the story of how the statue of Saint Sebastian came to the village of Malili, the village we once called home. Like so many stories, this one started with danger. A ship was caught in a furious storm and ran aground in Megara Bay. The hull cracked open on the rocks, and the waves pushed our saint ashore. All the sailors survived. They thanked their cargo for their lives, but none of these men could lift the statue to carry it off. This is G.P. Gottlieb, host for New Books and Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Today, I'm talking to Marco Raffalà about his debut novel, How Fires End, a richly textured story about a Sicilian immigrant who keeps the trauma of his childhood a secret from his American-born son, which allows the trauma to affect another generation. Told in four parts, from the perspectives of the son, the father, the aunt, and the fascist soldier who accompanies the father and aunt to America, this is a saga about heritage, coming of age, injustice, grief, and redemption. Hi, Marco. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start with you telling us how you came to write this beautiful novel.
So actually the novel started after a trip that I took with my father to Sicily, to the village where he was born, Malili, Sicily. And it was seeing that place and all of the stories that he told me about that place come to life for me in a way that hadn't before. And when I returned home from that trip is when I started putting ideas down on the page. And I didn't really know what I was doing yet or what I was writing, but that eventually turned into the novel.
How long did it take you?
It took me about 10 years to write it, and then a few more years after that to find representation and a publisher.
Mm-hmm. Let's discuss the title. How'd you come up with How Fires End?
I am the worst at finding titles. This book actually went through 20 or 30 really awful titles before I found that one, and my editor actually helped me find the title. And it comes from a line in the book, in the Vincenzo section. And we shortened it a little bit, and it just was perfect. As soon as the two of us saw it on the page, we said, yep, that's the title.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned your connection to Malili in Sicily, and you also have a connection to Middletown in Connecticut, where the second part of the story takes place.
Yeah, so I was born in Middletown, Connecticut. All of the Italian-Americans who live in Middletown can trace their families back to Malili, Sicily. So,
that really is a thing? They really did come from?
Wow. Yes, yeah. So my father was born there. He was a boy during the Second World War. And when the people from Malili started coming over to the United States, they sort of happened upon Middletown, and that just became the place where everyone from Malili came to if they were coming here. And then they eventually raised their money to build their own church, and they made a statue in the image of the statue of Saint Sebastian in the image of the statue from Malili. So they really sort of brought over their entire way of life, their culture. It's amazing.
It really is an interesting story. I didn't realize. So in the first section of the novel, Nella tells the story of how the town of Malili got its patron saint. It's kind of an exciting story involving a shipwreck. But will you explain why the people of the town feel so strongly about this, the patron saint, the statue?
So every village in, at least to my knowledge, in southern Italy, in the Mezzogiorno and in Sicily, they all have patron saints. And in Malili, there is a cave where there is a painting of what they believe to be Saint Sebastian. So when and it's been there for as long as anyone can remember. And so when the statue washed ashore, it was fate for them. It was destined to come to them and then to be theirs. And they were the only, and according to legend, they were the only ones who could pick up that statue off the beach. They brought it back to Malili and venerated the statue, and that's how that became such an important part of their daily lives.
Wait a second. So you're blurring, the lines are blurred now. So you're saying in real life, the people of Malili, the real city of Malili. So you were telling a real story there.
Yeah. So this is a story that I heard growing up all the time from not just my own father and my aunts and uncles, but also everybody in Middletown who is of a certain, I guess, age or generation. I don't know so much if they're doing it now, but they told and retold that story over and over again. You couldn't be in a Sicilian American in Middletown and not know about St. Sebastian, not know about the statue.
Was there also an incident where somebody destroyed it or ruined it in some way? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I was about to get to that. Not know that someone mysteriously destroyed the statue and how it was painstakingly restored. And no one talks about the person who destroyed the statue. Some people say it was, you know, bandits or brigands, and other people just sort of put their finger to their mouths as like, you know, shh, we don't talk about that. So I always found that fascinating, and I wanted to know more about that. Who was that person, and why? What would drive them to do that?
Has your book been translated into Italian yet? So they can read it.
Not yet. I'm still holding out hope for an Italian publisher to pick up the rights.
Yeah, that'd be fascinating for people to see what really happened, because maybe your answer, your story will be the answer now. Can you introduce Salvatore and describe the incident that sets the story in motion? Although World War II is actually what sets everything in motion, but you go on this.
So Salvatore he's born in Malili, Sicily. During the Second World War, as a young child, he's hiding in caves. It's while the Allied invasion of Sicily is sweeping through not just their island, but through their village, which is actually something, again, that happened in real life. Malili was bombed by the Allies, and then when Italy switched sides, it was bombed by the Germans. It was a very traumatic experience for everyone there. A lot of people lost their lives. So Salvatore, once the Allies pushed the Germans and Italians out of Malili and they essentially free the village from military occupation of the Germans and the Italians, there's a little bit of a celebration, and he goes to get his twin brothers, and he comes upon the two of them playing with an unexploded shell. And sort of that's the moment that changes his life and sets him on the path that he's on in the book. That sends him to the United States eventually. And he tries to warn them to not play with the bomb, and he's too late. And this isn't a spoiler. It's sort of right in the opening chapter of the David section. And he's too late, and he witnesses their deaths, which is a horrible event that you can imagine a young child would have to see. And that just irrevocably changes his life, the trauma of that moment. And he's unable to deal with that trauma. And a lot of that is from machismo and the nature of the idea of the way men are supposed to be. So he doesn't ask for help. He doesn't get help. He doesn't deal with the emotional fallout of what he went through. And that really at the core is what sort of destroys his life and changes him. And he tries his best to protect his son from that. But that silence, that sort of damning silence, does him in the end.
And that was also based on a family story, a true story, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Wow. So now let's talk about Vincenzo and explain for those who don't remember, why was he in hiding? And what was the problem with him having been a fascist soldier?
So Sicilians had no love for Mussolini, but there were those within the infrastructure of the government that were black shirts. They were fascists. They were party members. So as an Italian soldier, he's essentially a foreigner. He's an Italian. He's not a Sicilian. And he's enforcing a war that the Sicilians are sick of. And he at a young age, he buys into the ideals and the notion of fascism. He was in the Balilla, which is the Italian fascist youth brigade. It's sort of the Italian version of the Hitler youth brigade. So, in a sense, at a very young age, he was brainwashed into this political philosophy. And he only realizes later how wrong that was. But he comes to Melilli and he realizes that the war is hopeless, that the island is lost. And he comes upon this family, Salvatore's family, and he tries to convince Salvatore's father to leave, or at least to take this gun to protect his family with. And his father won't leave. He won't take the weapon. He's not a violent man. And so Vincenzo goes back to the Germans that he's with and eventually deserts as the battle becomes hopeless and he doesn't want to die for a hopeless cause. And so he wanders a bit until he finds his way back to these two children, Salvatore and his sister Nella, and he takes them under his wing. And they try to start new lives together in the United States.
He's such an interesting character because he's really actually a horrible person in some ways.
Is. I mean, he was very hard to write.
Ooh, and then he turns into such a good, upstanding citizen. But what causes, like, he takes Salvatore, and they're young, they're kids, like 15 and 60, something like that. What causes them to create an almost family-like bond?
Well, they've both lost so much from the war. Salvatore and Nella not only lose their twin brothers, they eventually lose their parents to a horrible accident that is sort of related to an event that Salvatore took part in that was related to his trauma of losing his brothers. And Vincenzo, after the war, tried to go back to Rome to his parents and found their home destroyed, and learned that they were part of the partisans who were fighting against fascism. So he wanders a bit. He's lost everything, and he gloms on to those two kids in Sicily as like his redemption, his only hope to make amends for everything that he's done. So that's sort of why he goes back and tries to find them and convinces them to go to the United States with him.
But he also had a chance at love and he let her slip out of his life. Why couldn't he reciprocate her love?
I don't believe that his trauma allowed him to feel that he was worthy of love. You know, and if you can't address your own trauma, if the only emotions that you allow yourself to feel are anger, then how can you express love? And so that's where he's in that sort of amorphous place where he doesn't believe that he deserves Maria's love, and he also can't really express it because he's too damaged, and he doesn't know how to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't ask her for help because that would be weakness. He's a man. He's not supposed to ask for help, and he certainly shouldn't ask a woman for help. That's against all of that ridiculous, all of those ridiculous notions of machismo. So,
You tell us on the book cover that Salvatore ends up losing his American-born son, which is yet another heartbreaking moment in your novel. How did you decide to let that happen?
It took a very long time for me to come to the realization that had to happen. And I wrote pages and pages of more David as an older man, and it was all lifeless and awful. And I came to realize that for Salvatore to even tell his story, it has to come from the trauma of losing David, of understanding what his silence finally cost him.
Mm-hmm. And then continue a little bit about Tony, David's middle school nemesis, and how his own, he's goaded by his father and beaten by his father. Let's just mention him a bit.
Tony Morello is, I love him and I feel sorry for him. He's also a lot like David, caught up in his father's pain and inability to form connections and heal. And so they're sort of playing off the echo. So David and Tony are playing off that echo of both of their parents, who have this animosity with one another that goes all the way back to the war. And Tony really is, I love where he ends up without giving anything away, but Tony it was important for me to have that Tony character. And he was another character that came in very late in the revision process.
Mm-hmm. Food plays a really important role. I love your descriptions, and I actually had to stop reading at one point to go roast some sweet peppers. So let's discuss the menu. What was fun about that? Did you try everything? Was it food your mother made?
Yeah. I mean, my father and I roasted peppers. We peeled them. My father grew a garden in our backyard, so I was reared in that world, and I gained a lot of weight writing this book. Yeah, I mean, all the food in the book is food that either my father cooked or was available at family gatherings that his sisters would bring. So it was all it was all around me growing up.
There's this one heartbreaking towards the end where Nella bakes a cake every year for the church sale.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that cake.
I'm trying to remember what that cake is.
But she does it every year. Is it the same cake every year?
It is the same cake every year. Yeah, no, it's the same cake. I think it might be the almond cake. She's very devoted to, as all the Sicilians and Sicilian Americans are, to St. Sebastian in Middletown, to the church. And so she does this every year for the festival. And every year in May, there's a festival in honor of St. Sebastian. And there's an auction where they raise money for the church. And they have this contest. No, I'm sorry, not a contest. They have this auction, and no one will buy her. No one will put money down for her cake because of her family history. And it just felt like it was one more moment where you could see the damage done, and also the pettiness in people who can't forgive.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking, but I also wanted the recipe. So
the recipe is, it's actually on my website.
Oh, that's good to know, because I was a little disappointed at the end of the book. I kept hoping for recipes, but this is good. Good info.
There's a book club guide on the website, and you can download it. And in that PDF file is the recipe for Nella's almond cake.
Excellent. And other things too.
No, it's just that one recipe.
Oh, just the one. Okay, that's the one I really wanted. Excellent. You mentioned the garden. The garden was almost like another geographical location. So there was the Sicily, and then there was Middletown, Connecticut, and then there was Salvatore's garden.
Yes. The garden is, it's really his... it's his place of solace. It's the one thing that he can control. Mm-hmm. He can tend these plants. He keeps them alive. and they in turn feed his family. And it's that cycle of life that is peaceful for him, but also enables him to feel a connection to the earth, which is the only thing that he's ever really loved in life.
He said he loved his wife.
Oh yes, absolutely. I mean, it's the thing that I don't mean that he doesn't love his life. He doesn't love his wife or his children, but it's the one place where he finds a connection that is peaceful, away from all of the trauma that he's mm-hmm. experienced, and where he has a semblance of control over what's happening, and he can keep, you know, he tends that garden and keeps those plants alive, and they take care of his family. And it's like this connection that he has to it. It's this cycle.
You know, a lot of these people are traumatized, as you said, but you portray the town, which is a real town in Connecticut. They don't come off that well. Have any of their book groups invited you yet? Has their library?
It is at the library. It is at the Russell Library in Middletown, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard any complaints. Okay. I don't know that I meant to not portray people in Middletown well. I was like, the book is not all encompassing of everyone who's in Middletown.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, it's these particular individuals who came from Sicily who have this connection to the war are the ones who are deeply wounded and broken. And a lot I've heard from people who were from Middletown who aren't even related to me that I don't know, who no longer live there, have contacted me to be like to say that, you know, I remember the events of 1943 in Sicily. This book meant so much to me. So, yeah, no one has complained about potentially seeing themselves in the book and thinking that they were portrayed in a bad light.
It was just that business about nobody buying this lovely old woman baking a cake every year and nobody buying it except.
Right. Well, that also, I should add that, because I know I said that spoke to pettiness, but it also, I think it speaks to their superstition. Because her family, Nella's family, is believed to be cursed. And the malocchio, the evil eye, is something that looms large in Sicilian life and culture. So part of it is not being able to forgive, but also for some of those who are like Rocco, Tony's father, who are deeply connected to those events, and then others who are tangentially connected because they've heard about it or just because they come from that village. They don't want to get too close because they don't want to catch the curse, because they believe that the curse is something you can catch like an illness.
Well, that was going to be one of my last questions about the curse, and I'm glad you answered that even before I asked it. So it was a beautiful novel. And I'm wondering what you're working on now.
I'm hoping to get back to it soon. All of these recent events have been too, I haven't been able to focus, but I am working on a novel that takes place during the Allied invasion of Sicily over the course of like 4 or 5 days. It's very tightly focused, unlike this book, which is sort of epic in scope. Mm-hmm. And it's about a family in Melilli, Sicily, who help hide a Allied paratrooper during the war.
Hmm. Okay. So is that going to be another 10 years, or are you?
I hope not. I'm almost done with the first draft, and I think I just found a good title. I'm not going to say what it is yet, but I'm a little superstitious myself, talking about things that aren't finished.
Ooh, okay. Listen, this was so nice talking about it. I hope you have a huge amount of success, and that we all get through this very difficult time in the world. I was going to say in our nation, but it's a worldwide pandemic. So best of luck, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It was wonderful.
And thank you for joining me. Again, this is G.P. Gottlieb, author of the Whipped and Sipped Mystery Series, and host for New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Today, I've been talking with Marco Raffalà, author of How Fires End. If you enjoyed today's podcast and would like to discuss it further with me and other New Book Network listeners, please join us on Shuffle. Shuffle is an ad-free, invite-only network focused on the creativity community. As New Book Network listeners, you can get special access to conversations with a dynamic community of writers and literary enthusiasts. Sign up by going to www.shuffle.do/NBN/join.